The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Gospel of Grace podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. We would love to have you worship with us in person sometime. The church address is 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. In today's sermon, Elder Buddy Abernathy continues in his exposition of the book of Revelation. We're in the portion of the book that we have entitled The Tribulation on Earth, signifying that this portion of the book deals primarily with the trials and afflictions that God's people experience here and now at the hands of the wicked. Today, Brother Buddy explains that Babylon, while a real historical city, represents this wicked world system. And ultimately, we learn that Babylon will fall when the Lord returns in glory.
Chapter 17, verses 1, 3, and 5, Revelation. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. Verse 5. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Now, let's think about this picture that's been described. And as we consider what the very chapter says that those symbols represent, I believe we can develop an idea of what's under consideration here. Now, the woman on the beast is referred to in verse 18 as that great city that sits upon seven mountains. Verse 18 refers to her as that great city. Verse 9 refers to her as sitting upon seven mountains, and also says she sits upon many waters in verse 15. And we've already read in verse 5 that she has Babylon written on her forehead. So let's think about those statements which are made about the symbolic language and see if we can get an idea of what that represents. So think of a great city that sits upon seven mountains, and also sits upon many waters, which, by the way, is described in verse 15 as peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. So we have a woman on a beast, and it describes her as a city sitting upon seven mountains, sitting upon many peoples, with Babylon written on her forehead. I believe this is a description of the world. Now, when we talk about the world, we're not talking about the planet that we live on. We're talking about this world system. And here's one of the reasons why I believe it's talking about the world. When you think about seven mountains in conjunction with many waters, which represent multitudes and peoples and nations and tongues, that describes something that's all over the physical world. Mountains, waters representing all peoples. That's something that is worldwide. And it says that on her forehead is written Babylon. Babylon is usually a word that represents this world. Now, when we think about this world, we're thinking about that world that John talked about in 1 John 2:15, when he said, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of God, but is of the world. So think about that. Wherever you go, even if you isolate yourself, you're still subject to the influence of this world. You can travel the waters, you can travel the mountains, you can be among all peoples. Wherever you go, Babylon is there in one form or another. Remember, Babylon is often used to represent the world. So that describes the woman on the beast. Now, the beast can refer to influence from beneath, that is, satanic influence. And again, as we've already noticed several statements, we see that this is defined here also in the book of Revelation in verse 8. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. You'll see in later chapters that this beast that goes into perdition is cast into the lake of fire. I know this is a lot to say so far. I know it's not presented in an orderly way, but I'm mentioning these details so we can reach a conclusion about what he's referring to when he talks about a woman sitting upon a beast, and the beast also has 7 heads and 10 horns. We'll get to that in a little while. But what you have so far is this woman representing the world, representing Babylon, and she sits upon a beast which represents influence from beneath. It represents Satan himself, but in particular, it represents his influence in the world. So what do you have? You have this world system. You have this world that is opposed to all the things of God. You have this world that contains the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, and it is sitting on the beast. This world is under the influence of Satan. So that's the idea, that's the concept that we can come to as we try to interpret this strange vision of a woman upon a beast with 7 heads and 10 horns. Now, as we look tonight, beginning in verse 9, we'll read about the 7 heads and the 10 horns of the beast. And the book, the chapter will tell us what they represent. But I want to present this to you first. I believe that description of the woman on the beast, which seems to be a picture of the world and its influence, that is something that is not visible to the natural eye. In other words, even as we sit here in the assembly tonight, we all know our minds even now can be influenced by the world, can be influenced by Satan, who is the prince of the power of the air. We're under that influence even as we gather together tonight, but it's an invisible realm, isn't it? Now, it's lived out in the lives of wicked people especially, But when we think of the world, we're dealing with a realm of influence which Satan is underneath, or is the one that is supporting that and giving power to it, as we'll read about in Revelation. But it's not in and of itself visible, other than the results of the influence of the world in the lives of people, both children of God and especially those that are not children of God. But then now, as we read about these seven heads and ten horns, we're going to get a visible representation. We're going to see how this influence of the world is visibly manifest in the world. And we'll see that as we begin reading in verse 9. It says, "And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth, and there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space." Now, isn't it peculiar that verse 9 begins with a statement that's inconsistent with the rest of the wording of the chapter? It says, "Here is the mind which hath wisdom." He's used all this symbolic language. And now he says, here's the mind that has wisdom. Here's the person that understands. And I believe the reason he says that is because now he's going to talk about visible things that are the result of the influence of the world, which is under the influence of Satan. Here's some things you can actually observe as a result of this. And if you recognize that, that's wisdom. It's wisdom when you can identify the world and how you need to avoid it. So he says, here's the mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth, and there are seven kings. I believe the idea there is a reference to seven kingdoms, because it's seven mountains and there are seven kings. So I believe this is representing kingdoms. Now notice what it says about these seven kings over these kingdoms. He says, five are fallen and one is, and the other is not yet come. That's seven kingdoms. Now, when he says five are fallen, you can consider in world history that there have only been so far six world empires. That is, empires that ruled the known world in their day. Now, these empires, unlike how things are in our time, could not influence the entire physical world. They had influence where the world was, they had influence in an area that was considered the world at that time. Now there was the Babylonian Empire under Nimrod way back in the book of Genesis. There was the Assyrian Empire, and the one we all are familiar with, the Babylonian Empire under Nebuchadnezzar. You remember he was referenced in the book of Daniel. Then there was the Medo-Persian Empire, and then the Greek Empire under Alexander the Great. Now that's just some history that I'm presenting just to show that there have been five kingdoms, five world kingdoms which fail. And then he says, one is. He's referring there to the Roman Empire. And did you know that that's the last world empire there has been? It's interesting that since the time of Jesus, and that is beyond this time of the Roman Empire, that there has not been another one. But he does say that there is one more that has not yet come. So what's so important about that? The point he's making is that the world, under the influence of Satan, so influences things in this world that it results in world empires often led by ungodly men. Now, I've used several times the regime of Hitler. Now, he didn't have worldwide control, but he was trying to, and we know he was a wicked man. That's how it goes when there's dictators over world empires. So the idea here is that this woman on the beast, representing the world under the influence of Satan, this invisible realm of operation, is manifest in the actual affairs and empires of this world. This beast had seven heads, and those seven heads represent the manifestation of the world, the manifestation of Babylon, of spiritual Babylon. And this has been lived out or manifest throughout history, all the way from Nimrod up to the time in which John was writing, when the Roman Empire was in the world, and that's why he said, five are fallen and one is. Now, it's interesting to see, and we're going to make a contemporary application now, that he says in verse 10, the other, that is the seventh king, represented by the seventh head, which means, by the way, completion, that's what the number seven represents, has not yet come. There hasn't been a world empire since the Roman Empire. So this is still, I believe, in the future, in our perspective, some 2,000 years since the Roman Empire. I think this next one, which, by the way, is the last one, will be literally worldwide. Now, I can't prove that, and there's a lot of this I can't prove. I'm trying to make a reasonable interpretation of it. But, you know, we've reached the point in technology and in military might that that well could be that seventh kingdom is a force that is so dominant that it takes over the world. You know, I remember years ago that people would talk about the United Nations wanting to take over the world and have one world government. Indeed, that might be this seventh and final kingdom, is some kind of one world order and one world government. But thank God it's the last one. And isn't that how it seems that the Lord often works? When it appears that the world or Satan is going to win, then the Lord overthrows it. And imagine how we would feel here tonight if we lived to see a time that the United States fell, and maybe there was a coalition of nations that stated that their purpose was to get things back in order. And of course, whenever something like that transpires, it usually ends up with a cruel dictator overseeing things. But when it appears that Satan has conquered the world, has conquered, that is, the kingdom of God, then we'll see later in this book that that's when the end of this world comes. So there's seven kingdoms represented by these seven heads. Five are fallen. One is, that is when John was writing this, the Roman Empire was in existence. The other is not yet come. Now watch this. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. You know, you'll see language consistent with this in Revelation chapter 20. Notice verse 3 of chapter 20, referring to Satan, that is the serpent, the devil. It says he was cast into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should deceive, listen now, that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season. See how that harmonizes with what we read here in chapter 17. He'll be loosed for a little season. But then it goes on to say, in verse 11, and the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. Go back to chapter 20, and you'll see how this is consistent. It says, verse 7, when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations. And then skip on down to verse 9. They went upon the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints, the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. So we see at the end of time, Satan's loose for a little season. He deceives the nations, but then he's destroyed when it appears he's going to destroy the kingdom of God. So back here in chapter 17, you read something very parallel to that, as it talks about this seventh king. And he talks about the beast, which he refers to as even the eighth, but of the seven. It says he will go into perdition. Now, how can we make sense of him referring to the beast as the seven? Or he's the eighth, but he's of the seven. Well, you remember in 2 Thessalonians, we won't turn to this, but it talks about that man of perdition that will sit in the temple showing himself as if he is God. So I believe when we think about this seventh and this eighth king, which is in the future, even from our perspective, this speaks of this last world kingdom, that is the seventh, and it speaks of this son of perdition mentioned in 2 Thessalonians, and is it mentioned in Revelation 20 that Satan would be loosed, that this last final effort of the adversary, referred to as the eighth, is just a manifestation of what the seventh is all about. You see that? And now look in verse 12. The last part of this beast that is described. Remember, he had seven heads representing those seven kingdoms. Verse 12, and the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. Now, what in the world is all that talking about? We've already talked about seven kings represented by the seven heads. Why are there now 10 kings represented by 10 horns? I believe if you'll read this language, this is speaking not so much of kingdoms over which kings reign, but individuals that can have influence in a large way. And that's certainly true today. When you think about men who are billionaires that can have influence over our whole financial system, when you think about men in Congress that can make decisions that affect not only the nation but even the world, but you think of men, for example, like George Soros, men that have billions of dollars and do things to destroy our country. I believe that's what he's referring to here. He's referring to individual men, not men over a kingdom, because he said 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. Here he's speaking of individual men who receive power from the beast, just like Babylon, just like the world does, just like those world kingdoms do. But they receive power from the beast 1 hour. That is, it's just within their personal lifetime that they have this influence. They have 1 hour with the beast. And it goes on to say, it says they've received no kingdom, but they receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. They have one mind, and here's what it is, verse 14. These shall make war with the Lamb, capital L. Now you think about these, you think about men like George Soros, billionaires that do things to destroy our country. And it says these kind of men make war with the Lamb. They may not do it directly, but they certainly do it indirectly by the things they do to destroy our nation, which was founded upon and still has liberty for Christians. He says, they make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him, this is talking about God's elect in heaven, they that are with him are chosen and faithful. That can refer not only to those that are with him in heaven, but those that are his serving him here on earth, because it says they are faithful. And we don't need faith in heaven. You remember in 1 Corinthians 13, it says, now abideth faith, hope, and charity, and the greatest of these is charity. You don't need faith in heaven. You don't need hope in heaven. You'll have charity. So here it says, these that are with the Lamb are chosen and faithful. And then in verse 15, we've already stated this, but here it is in the verse that references it. And he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. Now, although I've already referenced that, notice after it mentions these 10 kings, these 10 men of powerful influence that make war with the Lamb, it now says in verse 15, beginning with the word and, it says, the waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are people and multitudes and nations and tongues. In other words, this woman on the beast, this whore on the beast, representing the world influenced by Satan, is also the driving force under these 10 kings, the driving force under these wicked men. And their influence is not limited to the United States. They can and do have influence all over the world. And in our time, they don't have to live all over the world to have worldwide influence, do they? They can do things with their billions of dollars that affect our economy and other economies in the world. So let's try to just review this very briefly. Here's the idea Here's the concept that we've talked about tonight in these verses. Without referring to the symbolic language, we just want to say that this symbolic language conveys to us that there is a world out there, a spiritual Babylon, a world which consists of the lust of the flesh, that is sensualism, the lust of the eyes, materialism, and the pride of life, that is humanism. That's what's out there in the world, the spiritual Babylon, and it's supported by the beast. It's supported by Satan himself. It's supported by influence from beneath. And you have seen that lived out in kingdoms throughout history, which were often ruled by wicked dictators and ungodly men. So we'll stop there tonight, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow when we'll present another message of God's sovereign grace. In the meantime, if you have any questions or would like to contact us, please go to the website at zionpbc.com, where you can subscribe and get email updates every time a new sermon or any announcements are posted. Also, you can contact me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter J, chrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast, and may the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.